This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You give me one shot here on a blue chip stock. Believe me, Kevin. Only problem I'm going to have is that you didn't buy more.
Nobody knows if the stock is going to go up, down, sideways, or in circles.
What's going on, NBA draft fans? Your boys are back. The Wolves of Ball Street, your favorite draft analyst. My name is Corey Tulliba. I'm here, as always, with my co-host, Albert Garbage Time, Gim. Albert, what's going on, man?
All is well. Before we started recording, we were talking about climate change and entrepreneurship and all this real world stuff. And now we're going to talk about basketball. So I'm excited. I'm ready to go.
Yeah, the weather here in New York is gnarly. It is crazy right now. Like you said off air, it looks like The Last of Us in New York right now. But we're here on with the Draft Deck NBA Draft Show on the No Ceilings NBA Draft Podcast feed to give you another player breakdown, this time with a potential top five pick. That's right. We are going to break down Cam Whitmore, the Villanova power wing. Cam Whitmore is a very young freshman. He'll be 18.95 years old on draft night. He measured in at 6'7", 235 with a 6'8 and a half inch wingspan at the combine. He played 27.3 minutes per game this year, averaging 12 and a half points per game, 5.3 rebounds per game, 0.7 assists to 1.6 turnovers, 1.4 steals, 0.3 blocks, shooting 47.8% from the field, 34.3% on threes, and 4.2 attempts, 70.3% on free throws on 2.5 attempts, 57.1 true shooting, PER of 20.5, BPM of 6.2. Now, Cam's preseason stock price, ESPN had him at 5, SB Nation had him at 6, Basketball News had him at 5, The Athletic had him at 5, Tankathon had him at 7, No Ceilings had him at 3, Sports Illustrated had him at 7, that was an average price of 5.7, he was 5th on the DraftDAQ IPO. Currently, ESPN has him at 6, The Athletic has him at 5, Tankathon at 7, Bleacher Report at 9, The Ringer at 8, No Ceilings at 5, Swish Theory at 9. Average price of 7. He was 7th on the April draft DAC update. We need to do a June update before the draft, but he was 7th in April. So, Albert, I ask, is Cam Whitmore stock priced too high, too low, or just right at 7?
I feel like consensus will say that it's too low. I feel like it's just right because I think I kind of average things out. I have him currently at 9 on my board, which I get it, is a little bit lower than most. If I'm honest with you, Corey, I actually ended up liking him more after the second deep dive of his game. But yeah, 7 feels just about right. I think this is a pretty decent class, actually. The more I watch these guys, the more I look at my board, I actually like this class a lot. So I think 7 feels just about right to me.
7 feels right to me, too. I have him at 9 as well, oddly enough. But you know, I think he's one of these guys where there is a real high-end outcome for him where he outproduces that 7. But I also think there's a low-end outcome for him that I think is a little bit more of a realistic possibility than some of the people at No Ceilings, where like taking that guy at 7 or at 9 feels like ultimately we look back and he could be even a guy who falls to the back lottery-ish. Because I don't think there's really a world in which he's not an NBA player. So when we're talking about floor, I think he's pretty safe in that regard, but I do think there are real areas of his game that we have to break down. Cause there's a lot of high end stuff and there's a lot of low end stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. It's time to invest $10 into Cam Whitmore. All right. I'm going to give you Jet Howard. I'm going to give you Cam Whitmore. And I'm going to give you Asar Thompson to spend your $10. Tried going with three wings, three guys that are all a little bit different than each other. How are you spending or investing your $10?
I don't really have to think a lot for this one. I have my answer pretty quickly. Once you rattle off the names, I have Jet Howard. I'm giving him $6, and then I'm going to split the remaining four between Cam and Asar. So they both get $2 each. My reasoning for that is Jet is five on my board, and then Cam and Asar are 9 and 10 back to back. So I felt like with them being back to back like that, they should get the even amount. So 6-2-2.
Okay. I am going to go 5-4 Asar. I currently have him at 7, I believe. Then I'm going to go with 3 for Cam, 2 for Jet. I have worries about both of those guys, and I have things that I love about both of those guys. So hopefully we get to break down Jet soon.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
But I think it's time to get into the scouting report for Mr. Whitmore. And I mean, honestly, there's no place to start other than we kind of have to start with his freak athleticism, I think, right? Like, that's where the conversation starts. Like, obviously, you see his frame, you see how he walks on the court, you see how NBA executives reacted to the pro day. I mean, holy Christ, that dunk in transition, man. Like, he runs the floor, and just think of like him running with some of these playmakers in the NBA. I mean, do we see where his head is on this alley-oop, this transition alley-oop? Like, if we pause it right here,
oh my God,
like, he's ready to kiss the rim, yeah. Right? Like,
Green.
He's never a guy that you have to worry about dunking on the way up. Like, he dunks on the way down. That's how high he gets. And when you look at his frame, it's 6'7", 235. Like, there are very few guys who, when he is up there, are going to stop his centrifugal force from, you know, just absolutely demolishing them. So he's an astounding, astounding athlete.
Corey, I think he's going to put some people on posters.
I think that would be fair to say.
I mean, just everything that you said, right? The athleticism pops. When we did the preseason pod on him, we asked the question, is he a better athlete than Amen Thompson? Well,
we did.
You know, yeah. And we both agreed that we thought that he was a better athlete than Amen Thompson. And I think it's because of things like, you know, the clip you just highlighted, the way that I remember this dunk against Creighton, dear God, just coming down the lane. Like, and it's not just him doing it in transition with an open lane. He can do it in a lot of different ways. He's got second jump stuff to him, which is awesome as well. The practicality, the usability of his athleticism that go beyond a practice floor or like a, you know, workout or something like that. It really shows in his game. It's a huge, huge percent, huge portion of his game. You know, he's relying on that athleticism. So I'm with you, man. It's a huge part of his game. I'm glad that we're starting with it here because, you know, generally we start with shooting, but this is his marquee skill. The marquee thing that people are going to talk about with Cam Whitmore has to be his athleticism.
And I stand by the argument that we made in Cam's favor as an athlete versus Amen. Like, Amen, a lot of really special athletic tools. He's certainly quicker with his first step, burstier, but Cam is a power athlete in the air. Like, and there's something graceful about the way he glides. He's just like, there's something about that that I think the power is underrated when we talk about athleticism. And I don't know if, like, I think there is a correlation. I don't know if there's a direct correlation between the two. Just because you're powerful doesn't mean you're athletic, obviously. But when you can combine the power with, like, the finesse and the hang time and the leaping ability. I mean, we saw him, like, the P3 test. He just absolutely shattered, right? He's a special athlete, and I think he could be used in the NBA like this, coming off these, like, DHOs to get him downhill in the lane. Like, not that Villanova's offense was all that pretty to watch, but, like, they did have a good amount of spacing in the lane. You know what I mean? Like, there was room for Cam to get downhill and operate. And I think, you know, there are areas of his game like this where he can get downhill off a DHO like this that are going to translate pretty seamlessly. And just the other thing, I like that he jumps off either 1 or 2 feet and he's comfortable going off of either foot.
Yeah. 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 No, Corey, just piggybacking off of what you said, I mean, very similar to what we talked about with Zion coming out of college too. You know, the size, power stuff. Not that I'm saying Cam Whitmore is, you know, the same as Zion or anything like that. But if we're talking about, like, you know, how the conversation goes and how it sounds, it's similar. As you mentioned, he's weighing in at 235. This is a beefy boy. This guy is huge, you know. Yeah. And not only is he huge, but he can get up there. And which is why, like, going back to the Amen discussion, it's like, well, Amen weighs significantly less than Cam does. And Cam, you know, it's not just like, hey, we're not trying to say he's fat, guys. What we're saying is he's got muscle. He's got, you know, he's got more to him than
he's ripped to shreds.
He's ripped to shreds.
He's like a sculpted, you know.
Exactly. And you can have jack guys. Like, what was that guy on the Nets back in the day? Was it Aaron Williams? Really jacked, but couldn't really move or jump or anything at all. You know, Cam Whitmore's not that guy. He can fly. He can really make his weight move. And I'm with you, man. It's a special, special skill. And I think kind of underrated at times. I do want to mention that his wingspan wasn't, like, crazy long either. So I feel like it means that much more how high he's getting, you know, because some of these guys, it's like they'll go for dunks. It's like, oh, he did a windmill, but it's like he jumped 4 feet, 4 inches in the air, and he just has long arms. Shout out to Shabazz Muhammad back in the day. But I mean, you know, he's not that guy. He can really, really fly, and he's really strong. So I'm with you, man.
Yeah, and I like him. You know, again, like in a lot of different scenarios, we'll get into, like, his play finishing, his downhill driving. But I also think that, you know, he is a good cutter, and the fact that, you know, he is so powerful, he's going to be able to absorb contact. He gets above the rim. This is a great, like, backdoor cut, you know, secondary break, semi-transition, right? Everybody's kind of, you know, confused about where to go. And he just really opportune timing, cuts behind the defender, gets a nice baseline dunk. And, you know, I think early on, like, this is the type of stuff that he's going to not only be able to do, but excel at early on.
Yeah, Corey, I just want to kind of say, I want to give a special shout out to our very own Tyler Metcalf, who wrote a great piece on Cam's offensive game. And something that he highlighted in his piece is that, you know, it's not a secret that Cam isn't the strongest shooter, right? So on plays like the one that you just highlighted, sometimes if Cam is on the weak side, his man can get caught a little ball watching sometimes because he doesn't really, you know, they're not really respecting the shot. But I think Cam, in his defense, he does a good job of leveraging that type of, you know, loss of concentration and focus into an opportunity for himself. So on this one, obviously his man caught ball watching on the drive middle. He makes a nice cut, gets a feed, huge, freaking gigantic two-hand dunk that looks incredible. And also, you know, kind of sends a message like, hey, don't sleep on me because I'm gonna cut you up and you're gonna fucking hate it, right? So I think that's one thing to his credit. Like, obviously we're gonna get to the shooting, but it's smart stuff. You know, if you're known to not be a dead eye shooter, you still have to do something, right? You got to make the most of your opportunities and what you've got going. So Corey, I love that you, because I freaking rewatched this play like 60 times just because it happened to our boy Kobe Jones. But this is something that he likes to do, you know, reject the screen, look, quick crossover, get downhill. He does a good job of that. I think Metcalf also highlighted that as well.
Yeah, he loves driving left, and if there's a ball screen, chances are he is going to reject it. And in this clip that we're playing, if you're listening on the podcast, It's the left side of the court. He's just going to have wide open court. The screen's going to come. He's going to reject it, and he's going to go straight through the chest of the defender, who is strong, strong chest, strong bodied, and he just moves him off his spot. He goes right into him. And that's something like he was a really good finisher around the rim this year. He was 65% at the rim and 64% in the half court, you know, so that's a really good number for a guy like him who, you know, needs to be a good finisher just for, you know, his overall efficiency. Like he's got to be able to finish at the rim, and he's been able to do that just by being big, strong, and he's got like pretty good finish around the rim. So, you know, we see that there, you know, with a guard or a wing, but it's not like that's the only kind of, you know, finisher or position that he could finish through, or, you know, we're going to see it here.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
So you know,
that I meant. Corey, I have a question. Cause you know, you're way better with terminology and coaching stuff. What is this play called where they lift everybody like this? Cause I noticed that, Villanova, they do a good job. They did. I obviously, like you mentioned, right, their offense wasn't the most fun, but I thought they did a pretty good job of, you know, getting Cam set up with some empty side stuff, empty side pick and roll to kind of get him going downhill or to, you know, kind of get him some ISO. He didn't get a lot of ISO looks, but you know, when he did, I thought like the craftsmanship on the plays were pretty good. What is this called when they lift everybody up like that?
Let's take another look at it. I mean, it could just be kind of, you know, like a getting organized into like a horn set. You know, but they did do a good job of getting him the space that he needed. And he's going through a center's chest, like a you know, Nungy's a big dude, you know what I mean? Like, and he's going right through his chest. And I mean, and that's what you get with Cam. He is a power wing, you know what I mean? Like 6'7", 235, with crazy athleticism and good touch. Like these are the things that he is going to be able to do very early on. Now that's not to say that there aren't times when he gets downhill that it looks a little awkward.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like he has that Jaylen Brown-ness to him. I believe his hands measured fairly small. His handle's a little loose. Like he's a good creative ball handler, but he can get loose and he can kind of get downhill with no plan. Yeah. And he does that here against Creighton. And, you know, he tries to go into Kalkbrenner's body and he moves him off his spot, right? But like ultimately, once he does, he doesn't have a plan because he just drove down into the paint like, all right, I'm going to move him. I'm going to get to the rim. And when Kalkbrenner absorbs the contact, and even though he gets moved, he's still able to stay in it. He doesn't really know what to do because, as we'll get to later on, he's not much of a playmaker.
Corey, freaking, I'm upset because I feel like you took all my talking points away, but it's okay. I first off wanted to say I loved what you said about him not having a plan, because it's literally what I wrote in my notes, which, Corey, I think is very common for players of his skill set and age, right? Like we get a lot of these young players that are really good athletes. That, you know, they spend most of their youth, whether it's EYBL or high school ball or whatever, they just kind of have their way and they're not going against guys that are that good or defensive schemes that are that great either. And I feel like, you know, Cam kind of had this thing where he would get going downhill sometimes and then just be a little shocked when he met the center at times. And if things didn't go exactly the way that he maybe thought it would go or he was used to it going. But the thing that you highlighted at the end is really, really important. I thought there were a lot of times where he had the opportunity to leverage his drives into opportunities for others and didn't always happen. And the numbers are kind of there. I believe he had a 19 assists to 42 turnovers for the season, which, you know, I'm not a math expert, but not the best, right?
Not the best.
Not the best. So wanted to agree with you there.
Yeah. And even if we look at this possession, you know, I want to dive deeper into his playmaking a little bit later on, but I'm going to pause it when he gets into the paint. And, you know, look, he doesn't have necessarily the corner there. If he was a little bit more creative, maybe he could make that corner read, but he does have the opposite wing.
Yeah.
You know, Nembhard is just crashing because he knows, like, once, like, the scouting report on Cam is like, once he gets downhill, he's not doing anything but trying to get to the rim. So there's just four blue shirts there. And that's going to be really hard to finish in because, you know, he's got good footwork. You know, he uses pivot well, and he's got pump fakes, all of that. But when and if there's one guy there, because, you know, the blue shirts are worried that maybe you're going to kick out, so they can't commit off their man as much. Maybe that, you know, that'll work out. But when they know you're not passing, like, they can just kind of crash, and now it's clogged and you have nowhere to go with that footwork. And, you know, that's not a great thing, but we'll get into that a little bit later. One last possession of Cam as a ball handler, because I think it's a pretty slick, it shows his creativity in getting downhill. It shows him using the pick and roll, which I think he definitely needs to get better on. Again, he goes left, splits the defense, and then, you know, he can get a little bendy. You know, this is kind of like a below the rim extension finish, and he has that too. So, like, while he can get up, he could still finish below the rim. And I think that ability to, you know, finish above and below the rim is going to be really important for Cam going forward, because, you know, we've seen guys who are just crazy athletes. And if that's the only part of the game that you have to you as a finisher, like, you're going to be able to, a good defense is going to be able to take that away. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, no, 100% agree. And Corey, just to kind of go off of what you're saying, I agree that he has a high low stuff. He also has the left right stuff. As you mentioned before, you highlighted earlier, he's a guy that likes to drive left, but also he can finish left. You know, he's not one of these guys that doesn't have a left hand. I'm not saying he's Kyrie Irving, but his left hand is plenty good, in my opinion. And he showed it off with some good left hand finishes. Some of them, to be honest, I thought they were a little bit lucky, kind of threw some stuff up there with his left hand, but hey, they went in, and he also had some clean ones as well. So I'm definitely with you. The athleticism is there. I think, you know, Corey, I think the ultimate point that we're trying to make here when we're talking about just the athleticism aspect of it is, yeah, he has, you know, S tier, high 1% type of athleticism. I think he's just got to learn to refine it a little bit. I think he's very north and south right now, maybe incorporate a little bit more east and west, incorporate a little bit of, you know, changing speeds and things like that. But it's not everyone's born with the raw stuff that he's got. So the fact that he has it, I think we've got to give him credit for it.
Yeah. We do. It's a great starting point, right? You know, a lot of players would be blessed. All right, now let's talk about, you know, we're talking about the finishing, and we're talking about how he doesn't always have a plan. And we're going to show a couple more examples and talk about areas of his game where he really needs to improve, because I think the idea with Cam is that he's potentially going to be this three-level scorer, right? That's kind of the idea. He is very, very far from it right now, and he hasn't really shown anything during his freshman year to make you believe that's actually a realistic outcome, other than the fact that, like, he's very athletic. Like, he's potentially got two. I would give him maybe 1.75 levels of scoring. He is a really bad in-between player. Like, one of the worst in the class. Because he's got no plan. If he doesn't get to the rim, he was 2 for 9 on floaters. So, you know, any of the touch that he maybe has shown on his layup package is not there. And a lot of the time it's because he doesn't have like he's not trying to get to a floater. He's only getting to it if somebody's standing in his way.
No, I'm just laughing. I'm just thinking about, yeah, I was just thinking of Daryl Morey. I'm sorry. Yeah, he's clearly not a three-level guy at all. I'm with you. To his credit, though, like, I think I do want to, yeah, like, this is pretty gnarly stuff. But I do want to highlight, like, the context that he played in wasn't always set up for success. I know I've mentioned before that they did some nice stuff, but overall, I'm with you, Corey. I think it's, God, but, you know, Corey, if you're okay, so this is my question. If we have a prospect like this in Cam Whitmore, who essentially showed nothing in terms of in between game, then do we start? I feel like it's a bit of a stretch for us to be like, oh, this is something that he can work on, or he will work on. It's like, well, if he didn't have it at all, are we sure he's ever going to have it is kind of the question, right? Like, because some guys, it's like, oh, he had a couple flashes here and there. I believe that, you know, with refinement and work, he can get better. But if we have someone like Cam who didn't show it off at all, then are we just straight dreaming by saying like, oh, you know, he's going to develop this and that? Like, from what? Like, if it wasn't there at all, shouldn't we just accept that it's not going to be there? Or do we really just believe in NBA development? I think it's tough.
You believe in the youth, the fact that he is one of the youngest players in the class. So that's the first thing. You believe in NBA development. And then you try to look at guys like maybe like Jaylen Brown, who, if you look at his college tape, like a lot of it was really rough. And he went to the right situation where it made you go like, okay, like this could work because he ended up here. So that's what you hope for. If Cam goes to the wrong situation, I do think you could be dreaming if you think that that is just going to develop. But you try to buy into some of the positive flashes. Now, as the floater, there were none. He it's not a move that he tried to get to. He only used it as like a last resort when somebody stifled him from getting to his spot. And now extending that out, that in between area a little bit, he was 3 for 16 on mid-range shots, 19%. Now this is one of the makes, and you're like, all right, like this is a tough shot. And like, ideally, if you believe in Cam's potential, if you believe in him as a top five guy, you believe that he is going to potentially be able to knock shots like this down a little bit more consistently, hand in the face, tough shot, unbothered. Right. But for me, a lot of times I'm just like, all right, well, there aren't enough flashes based on the numbers, and it's a low sample size. And low sample size is something that we have to talk about with Cam a lot, positively and negatively. Like, maybe if a couple of more of these shots go in, we're like, all right, like I see the flashes. I could believe in him being a three level scorer. But too often, you know, the misses are pretty rough. The shots he's taking are pretty hard. They're difficult shots, and they're like, he's stepping back, you know, 1 foot behind the line. Now, like the spacing and the areas of the floor where he's stopping, like, sure, he can refine that and he can turn that into a 3-point shot. But like his mid-range pull-up game right now is really tough, because when his shots go in, a lot of times they're really soft. He shoots like a really high arcing soft ball, but like his ball placement is like, his misses are pretty inconsistent. And you know, I just think this three-level scoring thing, this mid-range thing, I haven't really heard or seen a lot of people mention it. And like, I think it's under-discussed, because if he's going to be this big-time scorer in the league, and that's what you're betting on, because we've alluded to he's not much of a playmaker, he needs to be able to knock these shots down more consistently.
I just want to say, Corey, like, we have to highlight the fact that you said 3 for 16. That's a low percentage on a low volume, which then, you know, people might say, well, if he takes more, it's like, oh, well, then you look at the film and everything that you just said, right? The misses are pretty rough, right? They're pretty gnarly. I mean, I went back and watched every jump shot he took in college, and there were some that that made me want to stab my eyes out, right? Like, they were really, really gnarly misses. Corey, it's unfortunate, but everything that you're saying right now is why he ended up 9 on my board. A big reason why he ended up 9 on my board, because we started off talking about the athleticism, really intriguing, really special stuff. I think we can use that word. We can use that superlative and not feel like we're cheating or doing too much, right? He's a special athlete. However, it's the stuff in between that is missing, right? The handle stuff you mentioned, it's not the best. It's good. It is good. I think it is good. Not the best, though. The in-between game, the mid-range stuff, straight up not there. I feel like sometimes I'm of the minority, even amongst, you know, like people at No Ceilings, that I'm actually not a big buyer in his jump shot. I think there are things mechanically that I thought were kind of weird that I'm really excited to hear you talk about and give us kind of the lowdown on. Even his 3-point shooting, there are a lot of things, even when he was shooting off the catch wide open, there were moments where I was like, oh, I really don't like that at all. So yeah, Corey, everything that you outlined for us is why he ended up 9 for me. So
yeah, let's talk about his shooting. Cause this is one of the cells with him, right? Like, he's this guy who can knock down these really tough three-point shots. He showed this, like, isolation, step-back ability that you're like, whoa, like, when this shit goes in, it's like, I see the vision. Like, there's a little bit of, like, Anthony Edwards. There's a little Jaylen Brown, right? Like, there's, we see these guys who are so vital to a team's success as, like, a number one, number two option. And this is the kind of scoring where, like, in the playoffs, when things get hard, if you have a guy who can make these kind of shots, that is unbelievably valuable. So when it goes in, it looks great. And there were enough of these kind of shots that you can buy into it, the flashes of it, right? Like, he's obviously confident enough to be taking these shots. Like, these were not shots that Isaac Okoro was taking. These are real legit top end shot making. Now, he shot 34.3% overall, 37.5% guarded catch and shoots, 32 attempts, 46.2 on unguarded, only 13 attempts, 40% on catch and shoot overall. Like, there are, obviously, like, shooting indicators that can get you a little bit excited, but I do think that 34.3% overall mark, the 70% from the line, and some of the misses being, you know, like you said, like, some of those misses are pretty gnarly, and there's definitely reason to be concerned, especially because when he does get the ball out on the perimeter a lot of times, like, the ball stops with him. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not looking to move off it. He's looking to put up one of these tough shots. And, you know, for me, if I'm in the mind of a coach, these are shots I live with. Like, yeah. If he makes it, it's like, all right, go do it again.
Yeah.
Right. Like, tough contested shots. Like, he makes that shot, like, clap him up, tell him to do it again.
Yeah. Corey, I wanted to ask about mechanics. I think for me, just from the stuff that I saw on tape, if I'm wrong, let me know. I thought his base was a little inconsistent at times. I thought he got really narrow on some of his misses. I thought his stroke overall wasn't always the smoothest. Obviously, when it went in, it looked great. But when he missed, I felt like sometimes he did the lean back thing as well. I thought the gather took some time. Just watching his shot, I was like, I don't know if this is the most repeatable shot. I don't know if it's the most consistently pretty shot. So please give us more, because I feel like those are the things that I highlighted. I might be wrong. So, yeah.
First, I want to say shout out to everybody watching live on YouTube. Make sure that you subscribe if you're not subscribed yet, and you hit the like button. Shout out to James Dills in the comments, who says, great work, you guys. Just bought the draft guide. Appreciate that. The draft guide is available now at NoCeilingsNBA.com. Just click on store, take you to our big cartel account. D. Stevens says he has an interesting stroke, kind of similar to Ant Edwards. And there are definitely some similarities. Now, breaking it down, you're right. It gets really narrow. On this possession we're watching, like, you see how narrow it is. And he's got, like, big, broad shoulders, right? So it's like he's got this weird body because of how strong he is. He does have, like, a pretty high release point, which is good, but it's kind of, like, in front of his face a little bit. And the thing that bothers me the most is that it seems like his right hand is, like, above, like, on top of the ball when it releases. And it's almost like he's palming the ball instead of, like, having it in his fingertips. And I think a lot of the inconsistency comes from there. Now, if he... And look, NBA shooting coaches are fantastic. Like, I think he has a workable shot. Like, I was not confident in Isaac Okoro's shot. I'm a lot more confident in Cam having a workable shot. But I want him to eliminate some of this stuff. The ball stops and he settles for a tough step back three where he creates
not a rhythm.
He creates no separation. Like, the defender is just in his shit. I would much rather have him being a guy doing that at the end of the shot clock, but especially early on in his career, you know, being a guy who's spotting up off the ball,
yeah,
and playing off the ball, you know. But my question lies, okay, and you look here, his base is a little bit wider in this corner catch and shoot. The top stuff is still a little weird. The release point, you know, those issues I think have to get worked out, you know, in an off season and once you get with your team and whatnot. But the actual shooting base looks a little bit cleaner on the catch and shoot. But if his value lies in the fact that he's going to be like mainly a catch and shoot off ball shooter, and I don't think anyone's going to argue he's one of the best in the class, even if he shot 46% on 13 attempts and unguarded catch and shoot shots. If he is going to be this guy who's cutting and shooting off ball, then how high are you drafting that guy? Because he brings no playmaking to the table and he stops your offense completely. And that's why I have him at 9. Like, this is great, right? Catch and shoot on the wing in transition. Again, his base looks a little bit better, but just how high are you drafting a guy who doesn't have any like playmaking chops? That's what I want to know.
Yeah. I do want to say for our listeners out there, I promise you, Corey and I, when we do our boards, we don't talk to each other. There's no cheating involved. We're not look. It just happened to be that we both had him at 9. So I don't want you guys to get weird ideas. Okay. And I think Corey, for me, it's everything that you're saying right now. It's if there is no creation to him, if the in-between stuff is almost non-existent and you really got to squint to see it, for me, someone like me who isn't like a huge believer on his three-point shot, then that you have to ask that question that you just asked, Corey. How high do you take a player like that? Now, we haven't touched on the defensive side of the ball, so you know that's a part of the his game that I think is going to be an interesting conversation as well. But overall, like if we're talking about an off-ball guy who you're looking for at least early on in his career to be shooting off the catch and you know cutting to the basket and giving you you know physical defense and some rebounding, is that a guy that you use a top five pick on? I don't know. My answer would be no, which is why I have him at 9. So I'm right there with you, man.
Yeah, and that's my thing, because there is a point in the draft where his physical tools, his finishing, his potential two-way ability, and the fact he has shown a good amount of like tough shot making, that his potential is just too high to pass up at a certain point. You know, this is
but I do think
like he's probably a worse shooter than 34% says. And I just don't think that his off-ball stuff, because he has no connectivity to him at the moment, is going to be something that he's not somebody I would spend a top five pick on. And this is why I hate his fit with the Detroit Pistons.
Yeah. Like,
I hate it. I hate it so fucking much. And I know it's a popular one. I know people look at some of this off ball stuff and you're like, oh, that's why he would be great there. It's like, well, why are we drafting that at 5? Like if, because he's not taking, like if he has the ball, then Cade Cunningham doesn't have the ball to make decisions. And he's not getting any of the big men involved. If he has the ball, then like Jaden Ivey is just standing around. And like Cade has yet to show in the NBA that he could be a consistent three-point shooter. I do think he's going to be a very good one. Jaden Ivey, not the greatest three-point shooter. Jalen Duren, not a three-point shooter. James Wiseman, not a three-point shooter. Bogdanovich, old, probably going to trade him. Isaiah Stewart, not a three-point shooter. Like nobody on this roster is a legitimate three-point threat, except for the guy that probably isn't long for the team. So for me, it's just like, I hate the fit there, because you're not like, if you do that, you're kind of not betting on him developing any of the other stuff, because it's just not the best use of his talents. If you're like, oh, he'll just be an off ball guy. All these guys need reps on the ball. Cade's going to be a high usage guy. Jaden Ivey's going to be a high usage guy. Cam Whitmore, if you draft him, you want him to be a high usage guy. Like, do you want, like, I just don't, what happens if he shoots 30%?
Corey,
what happens?
Corey, the point I was going to make was that you said that you don't believe that he's a 34, that he might be worse than 34%. I started to think there might be a real world that he never shoots 34% from three in his NBA career. And it wouldn't be crazy. And I know people are not going to like hearing that. But I think, Corey, it makes sense for him to be drafted by the Pistons if what the Pistons want to do is zag against everything else that the NBA is doing right now and just go like 90s Pacers. Like, hey, let's go Mark Jackson, Reggie Miller, Dale Davis, Antonio Davis, and Rick Smits. Let's do it. You know, if that's what they're
they might be with all the centers they're getting.
I mean, if that's what they're looking for, go for it.
But Marvin Bagley can't shoot. Killian Hayes can't shoot. What are we doing here? Can we get somebody who can shoot?
Yeah, so bad idea, Detroit. If you grab Cam Whitmore, Corey will not be watching your games, or he'll be watching all of them just to laugh at you guys.
It's going to be ugly, man. That's all I'm saying. And Cam doesn't get to the free throw line. For somebody that powerful, he doesn't get to the free throw line a lot.
2.5 attempts per game, pretty bad.
You know, maybe he gets there more often, but I think one of the reasons he doesn't get there that often is because, you know, when he's going to the rim, you know, he's attacking it. Now, when he gets a step on you, he's going to put you on a poster potentially. So you better get the fuck out of the way. Yep. But if you know that he's either shooting a three or you are getting all the way to the rim, so you could play him. The defenses are going to adjust. They're going to beat him to the spots. Like, if people beat you to the spot, they're probably not going to foul as much. You know, there's no unpredictability. He can't pull up in the mid-range. He doesn't have that in his bag yet, and he doesn't pass. So he's so predictable as a basketball player, right? And that's why he was probably so inconsistent this year. Like, he had games where he looked like this superstar, and then he'd have games where he scored under 10 points.
Corey, you know who does have a mid-range jumper, a good handle, and can pass? Jairus Walker. He can do those things.
he can.
Yeah.
We love ourselves some Jairus Walker. And Pepega Jones asked, Pistons fan here, do you trust Walker's jumper more than Cam's? I think I probably trust them equally, to be honest.
I think I trust Jairus's a little bit more.
I think that's fair. I do think that's fair. I definitely think he's going to take way more threes that are appropriate than Cam is. Now Cam, I just went through his box score. He had 11 games where he scored less than 10 points. Now look, Villanova as a whole, there's some context, right? That sure, like the team didn't move the ball a ton, but a lot of that is just because like Cam was guilty of that too. So I'm not blaming all of this on context. And I think when you're not the level of shooter that Cam is, like, you're going to be inconsistent and have those games. I think that's going to be a trend that we see continue. All right. So now let's talk about his playmaking a little bit. And I think this is kind of like a good example of where he's at as a playmaker, as we see him initiate out of the pick and roll. And I think he needs to do this to be a top five pick. Like, he comes off it. Like, he does not recognize that there might be three blue shirts in the paint, and they stop him at the nail, and he's got to kill his dribble as soon as he comes off the screen. Like, there's no retreat dribble. He doesn't have the feel yet, and he's young, and I get it, but there's no guarantee that he's going to develop this feel. Like, he doesn't recognize that the big's in drop. He doesn't recognize the help's going to dig at him, and, you know, they get a good shot out of it, luckily, because the rotations are sloppy, but these are the passes that Cam Whitmore would make. You know what I mean? Like, he would only pass as a last resort. Shout out Papa Roach.
Yeah. I mean, there were, I think it was Stephen Gillespie who wrote a piece on him, and he did highlight a couple passes, but Corey, I'm right there with you.
I think I vehemently disagreed with that.
Yeah. Cause trying honestly, it's exactly what you just said, right? It was coming off the drive. He kind of gets clamped up. Last second, he throws a desperation pass and it leads to an open bucket, and you start to go, oh, maybe there's some passing there. But I'm with you. I just the numbers don't lie. Number one, right? 19 to 42 is pretty rough, right? But on top of that is plays like we're talking about right here, right? Like, he just doesn't have the vision, doesn't have the feel, isn't something that he's actively looking to do either. So if you just are that guy, I mean, I don't want to use terms like, you know, he's got blinders on or whatever, but sometimes it really feels like it. So I'm right there with you.
Yeah, 100%. Now, I think the one thing that he got better at I guess you would say, as you know, he went through the year, and we'll also mention, like, he was injured early on. Came in to the season off of an injury. You know, he came right into the play. That's always difficult, right? It's not like he was healthy, had a full season of training camp, and, you know, was able to mesh with everybody. So I get it. But the one thing he did get better on, better at, not that I want to say that he's good, because he's certainly not, he's okay at hitting the roll. He's okay at hitting the roller, you know, like, it, you know, it's, and it's a simple read. It's an important one if you're going to put the ball in his hands, especially in Detroit, where all of the bigs are rolling to the rim. You know, he's going to have to make this kind of play if he were to go there at five. So, I mean, that's a nice pass, like, good feel. You know, it leads to a pretty decent shot. One more, you know, we'll show another one here where we get him the ball on the left wing. Tries to reject it, doesn't wait for the screen to come. Again, not a lot of feel, but he takes a retreat dribble, gets his guy a layup here. And this is, again, like, going back to the field, like, he sees an opening. He's going to try to attack it. There's no patience. And this is where you see a lot of the youth. Like, he's trying. The guy beats him to the spot. And he's got to come. You know, that's a good pass. All right. But it was a secondary option. He didn't let the play develop. He doesn't let anything develop. He's just so eager to score. You know, he has this mindset where he has to score. And that makes me a little bit nervous. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just nervous about it.
No, I'm with you, Corey. It's, you know, you're in dangerous territory when the only thing you can highlight is something that he's, like, kind of okay at. We're just not in a good place when we're talking about Cam Whitmore and his playmaking, right? You said he was okay at, you know, finding the roller. Like, well, probably not a good sign. I actually love Mr. Ray's comment here where he said the flashes of playmaking by Whitmore is so sparse that it's difficult to even call them true flashes. Like, I'm... Hey man, Mr. Ray, right there with you. You know, you hit the nail on the head. Like, it was so rare that it's really difficult to, like, you start saying things like small sample size, but this is like minuscule sample size at this point. And, you know, it's...
If we're going to shit on Gigi Jackson for his passing stuff, we have to do it for Cam.
Yeah.
Like, we can't make excuses. Like, we got to be real. Like, this dude is not a good playmaker. He doesn't, like, how, and I don't know if there's a way to predict, like, if he turns it around, there are no indications that we're like, oh, he, this is something that we all saw coming. Cause it's like, no, we're lying at that point. We didn't see it coming. He didn't do it. He didn't show any instincts on that end, regardless of what kind of offense, Villanova's running. They're running the same set that we saw, you know, him get a nice downhill drive before where everybody lifts up. Yeah. And you know, this is a good counter to that. You know, so we saw a drive earlier, and now we're seeing a nice pass. But again, if he becomes some positive field guy, it's going to be because he got really good development. And I think betting on that, like, that's a tough thing to bet on. If you want to bet on him being a play finisher, a guy in transition, maybe a potential guy who's going to knock down open shots, get out in transition and potentially be able to guard a bunch of spots, I could buy that. And I think there's definitely, if he maximizes even that, maybe he is one of the five best guys in the draft. I don't know. But I just don't want to pretend that he isn't something that he's not, because he's only shown the capability to really make easy reads. Now, the one thing that I'll say where maybe he could be interesting, and this is not exactly it, but, like, this is kind of like mimicking a short roll pass, kind of, like, it's an offensive rebound that leads into, like, a broken play, but it shows him, you know, kind of making a quick decision to hit the dunker spot, and you can kind of see how it could mirror a short roll possession. So if you're looking at him as a guy who's maybe going to play up, because he definitely has the strength and maybe the speed and as a mismatch guy at the four, like, could be interesting. And I definitely think that's part of the appeal with him, that he is strong enough and measured at 6'7" inch shoes to do that. Maybe you use him as a screener to get him downhill, and maybe these playmaking reads become a little bit easier and you could do some interesting stuff here.
We got another day of NBA action. And with FanDuel, every night is a watch party. So it's time for your FanDuel crew to make their bets. So, what's the move tonight, gang? You know the new customers who bet $5 get $150 back in bonus bets? Woohoo! We're heating up, fam! Bet all the stars with all your friends and make every moment more, only on FanDuel. New customers bet $5, get $150 back in bonus bets. Make every moment more with FanDuel, America's number one sports book.
It goes down in the DM. It go down in the DM.
21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Spectrum Business works with small businesses nationwide, so we know that running your own business means doing it all. Marketing, sales, inventory, customer service, and more. Spectrum One for Business helps you keep it all connected for just $49.99 a month. Get fast, reliable internet, advanced Wi-Fi with Security Shield, and a free mobile line for one low price. Stay connected and do it all with Spectrum One for Business. Only $49.99 a month. Go to spectrum.com/business to learn more. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Corey, I just want to say really quickly, we're not saying all of this to hold it against him as a prospect necessarily. I think it's the context, right? As you've mentioned, if we had 20 mock drafts from 20 different websites in front of us right now, I'd say 18 to 19 of them would have him in the top five, top six, right? So if we're talking about a top five, top six prospect, then these things really start to matter, right? Because when we're talking about the guys at the very top of a draft, very top of a big board, a mock draft, whatever it is, you need guys that are multidimensional. It kind of comes with the territory. It's a reason why, you know, dunkers or centers with one or two skills don't necessarily go in the top five, top 10 anymore, is because when we're looking at the very top of the draft, you're looking for guys with multiple dimensions, with guys that you can potentially do stuff. You're hoping can do stuff with the ball in their hands, make decisions for you. So once again, I'm not saying that, I don't think either one of us are saying that, oh, Cam Whitmore is going to be a bad NBA player. What we're saying is for him to go in the top five and to solidify himself in the top five conversation, I think he's lacking those multi-dimensions for him to warrant that type of discussion, I think is what we're both trying to say. So I wanted to throw that in there.
No, I agree 100%. It's these guys, you know, we have to nitpick, you know what I mean? Gregory Castillo says, I'd rather bet on Asar. And for me, like, I think that I would too. And I think not necessarily for every team, but like if we're talking about maybe the Pistons or maybe even like a team like the Rockets in the top five, I think I'd rather bet on Asar because he does have that connectivity to him. He does have that same kind of off-ball cutting ability, transition ability, that same kind of top-tier athleticism, potential two-way ability, and the same kind of questions with his jumper. And to be honest, like I like Asar's form better than I like Cam's. And I don't think the few percentage points, which could have gone in either direction, a couple more misses there, it's, you know, even that percentage is closer to 30. Like I'd rather bet on that for that particular situation personally, because I think their potential is very similar. Their role's a little bit similar. And I do think that at a certain point you have to kind of like, you have to try to build a team. Now that's not to say that you're selecting somebody for fit and you're taking a guy who's like going to go 15th, fifth, you know, just because he fits your team better. But like, if there are guys that are going to allow you to develop them in a way that makes sense and they're very similarly talented, like if you take the guy that you think is just slightly more talented, but doesn't fit your team, like, let's say, you know, they do take like what if the best player available was a center? Can you take them if you're Detroit? Of course not, because they're not nobody like these guys aren't going to get minutes to develop. You have to be on the floor at some point in order to develop. And I just don't I think you have to draft for fit a little bit. It's one of the reasons why I think that Taylor Hendricks, friend of the program, would be a sneaky, interesting fit in Detroit. But that's kind of what makes Cam a little bit hard. Now, again, maybe you get creative. You could use him in different ways to get him to be more of a playmaker. Maybe he develops it because he's so young. We'll see. Let's talk a little bit more positively about his playmaking this one time, because this is probably the nicest pass that he had. Again, like, who was it, Mr. Ray, who said that we can't really call them flashes, but, you know, again, only really making this pass because he has to. But one-handed whip pass to the weak side corner off the wing, it's a pretty slick pass.
There's a flash.
A spark.
One flash. Yeah, I'm with you, Corey. I mean, look, once again, the context matters. Like, the help is there. He's got literally nowhere to go, so he just whips it because he sees the guy open. Just happens to have his head up. I'm with you, Corey. I actually loved everything that you said about the Ausar piece of this, because I have them back to back, and now I feel like I'm going to flip flop them just because of everything that you said. Because it's what I feel too. Like, I came into this thinking, and, you know, going into the deep dive again, I was just like, I just don't buy the shooting, don't buy the passing. And for him to be a top five guy, I think it's really interesting. And also, to that point, I feel like what Detroit ends up doing with that pick, I think it's going to be really, really interesting to see what direction they go and who they end up grabbing. They may end up grabbing somebody we never even expected. Could be really interesting to watch. But yeah, man, this is a flash. It is a flash, but not something I'd go anywhere near saying, like, oh, I think that he has this in his bag at all.
It's a singular flash. But now, okay, but, you know, we're talking about Cam and Ausar. Now, let me play devil's advocate and be like, all right, well, what if you do think Ausar or Cam is more talented than Ausar? Let's say you're Utah and you trade up to 5 or 6 or something. Both guys are on the board. Maybe Cam makes a little bit more sense in your system as a team that plays a lot of 5-out basketball, allows you to get downhill in space. And, like, if you believe in that shot creation really developing to, like, a Jaylen Brown level, and maybe if you're Danny Ainge, who drafted Jaylen Brown, maybe you see that same kind of thing, maybe Cam is the right pick. So I just think that situation and context and role is going to matter with some of these guys that are close in talent, is really just, I think that matters. Team building does matter. You have to build a roster at a certain point and not just, you know, select the top guy left on the board every time, because if there's too much positional overlap or the context doesn't matter and there's, like, you're drafting a non-shooter on a non-shooting team, it's like, all right, well, if you believe truly that Cam is so much more talented than Cade or Jaden Ivey and he's going to take the spot and you're going to move off those guys later, then fine. But I think they believe in those guys. So if you believe in those guys, then, like, you do have to consider it a little bit. Go ahead.
No, really, really quickly, Corey, I think, you know, people say you should never draft for fit. Well, you should also never say never, in my opinion. I think there needs to be a balance of things. I love what you said about it. Context is everything. So, yeah, I'm with you. Just wanted to throw that in there.
All right, let's get to the other side of the ball. And let's talk about his defense. What were your impressions about Cam on defense?
I actually thought it was a mixed bag. I was expecting to be really, really into it, but I left kind of lukewarm, if I'm honest. But I think, like, outlook-wise, I think he can be a good defender. I just thought in college. But, you know, then you start thinking, like, injury. He missed time. He missed, like, the first 7 games with, like, a thumb injury, right? Those things matter. I just felt – so one of the things that I wrote, like, some of the screen navigation with him was, like, freaking bad.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes he would get freaking demolished on screens and look like he had never seen a screen before. And
he looked like Jordan Hawkins trying to get around the screen or something.
I was like, bro, this is tough.
Like, you're too strong for it.
Yeah, you're getting demolished. And, like, some of it, I was like, dude, you should have seen that coming on, like, I don't know. Like, I was kind of discouraged with that. I thought some of his closeouts were really, like, I don't like to use this word, but, like, what I felt in my gut were, like, some of them felt really lazy at times, kind of slow, really late processing, I thought. I wanted to start with a negative because I thought there were some positives too, but those are the negatives that I saw and what I wanted to bring up first.
So, yeah, I agree. A lot of the screen net, like, I feel like Villanova put him on a lot of smaller guys.
Mm.
and I don't think that's going to be where his strength is.
Yeah.
I think that him being so strong, like, I get it. Like, he's quick enough laterally. Like, I do think he can move his feet. And when we talk about the positives and we show, you know, some of the positive stuff, like, he can move his feet. He's not the longest guy, but he can keep space closed and, you know, he could take it in the chest and wall off drives and stuff.
Yeah.
But, like, I agree. Like, I didn't think he was good chasing all the time. Like, I think he would lose focus pretty often, and like guys would make like pretty simple like flare outs and he would just like lose him for a second. Now, he's pretty good at recovering because he's so athletic, but I think at the next level that stuff might hurt him a little bit more. I thought he was pretty bad at the beginning of the season, versus I think he got better at the end, you know what I mean? Like, he started learning more for sure about where he was supposed to do. I think you saw some of like the event creation numbers increase a little bit because he ended up, I think, with like a 3 steal percentage. And I don't think he was generating a ton of steals at the start of the year. Like, on video, that was a great help side block there. You know what I mean? Like, I think there's some of that, but you know, a lot of times when I hear guys go like, oh, he's great, I think we could use him as a great weak side rim protector, and it's like a small forward, I'm like, really? Like, probably not. Like, it's really hard to block shots in the NBA, you know what I mean, when everybody's a really good athlete and finisher. I do think Cam is going to be a good defender.
Ultimately. Yeah, but really quickly, Corey, I just want to say, like, I thought, like, okay, late in the season, they're playing UConn. They had him chasing Jordan Hawkins everywhere. And I was like, well, yeah, is this the best idea? And to his credit, he was trying, but Corey, the thing that you said about the flare out stuff, dude, some of them, it's like, where the fuck are you going, dude? Like, there was like, I think it was against Providence. It was on the weak side. He was on his man. It kind of got caught ball watching a little bit, but the guy flares out and it's just like the direction that he took to get out to his man. I'm like, what the hell are you doing? Like, it was pretty gnarly at times. But to his credit, as you said, like his footwork, I thought he showed some quick hands at times. Could be a little pokey with his hands to get some steals. I'm not saying he's Jalen Clark by any means, but no, there were some real moments where he'd be really good with his hands, poke a ball.
He's got
out.
Good hands.
I think he's got good hands. Yeah, get out in transition. So to his credit to that, strength is going to help. The fact that he is strong in the NBA with an NBA-ready physique, that's definitely going to help. So yeah, I'm with you. It's refinement that has to come. The cleaning up of, and also like sometimes like an effort thing. I don't know if he was always like in the best shape, like cardio wise. I'm not saying like physical, like muscle wise, but cardio wise.
He looks leaner now than he did exactly during the season. You know what I mean?
Bingo. I wanted to talk about that because I think when, you know, like that P3 stuff, when it came out, like you see him in photos, it's like, oh, he looks skinnier, but not in a bad way. Like, I'm not fat shaming here, yeah, but he
it's
did.
Cutting season. No, it's cutting season.
Exactly.
He looks like he was bulking.
Exactly. He was a little heftier in the winter, but, you know, I think that hurt him at times. But overall, I think it's like a focus thing with him a little bit. Sometimes the effort stuff, maybe energy stuff, whatever it is. But I'm with you. I do think he's going to be a good defender. It's just, I think it's important for us to note that he was not a rock solid defender in his freshman season.
No, and he's 18 during this freshman season. Like, he's coming in halfway through. That's to be expected. He's, you know, playing in a good conference. But like you said, like, this is really quick hands, and he's going to turn defense into offense because he's going to get steals and he's going to go the other way. And, you know, he's going to make a lot of the highlight reel plays. But, you know, like you mentioned, you know, sometimes, you know, when it comes to, like, you mentioned Jalen, like Jalen said, like, sometimes he gambles a little too much. And it felt like, you know, like right here, Cam gambles to try to, you know, get two hands on a ball, right? And against Seton Hall. And it ends up as a Derrick Rose assist, which is, you know, when a guard misses the shot and the offensive player gets the offensive board and puts it in. Like, he doesn't need to do this when the big man is right there for the putback and there's no help. There's nobody there to get the rebound. Like, this is just a very young, youthful mistake. And ultimately, like, I'm not worried about this because he's giving effort, right? And that's something that a coach is going to be like, hey, I love the energy, I love the effort, but I need you to kind of chill. Yeah. Like, I need you to realize that you don't have to make the sexy play there. You just got to stay solid. So we're not, you know, putting the team in a worse off position. But, you know, I want to, you know, go back to kind of like the on-ball stuff. This is against Baylor Shireman. I think he does a really good job here of beating him to spots, taking it in the chest, and then like forcing him into a really tough fall away mid-range shot. Like I there are a lot of positive flashes defensively, more flashes on defense for sure than there were for his passing.
Yeah, man, I'm with you. But even a play like this, it really does highlight the athleticism, the footwork, the strength, right? He's just significantly stronger than Shireman here, where he's making his life difficult, gets in front, beats him to the spot, takes the bump here really well. Yeah, so, Corey, I think ultimately, sometimes, not all the time, sometimes elite athleticism can cover some of your warts.
Yes.
Sometimes it can clean up some of your mistakes, some of your bad positioning, sometimes your lack of focus. Athleticism can clean some of that up at times. Now, if he can really clean that up and get rid of some of that rookie season Mitchell Robinson to his game, I think we're talking about a guy that's going to be a good defender, like you said. It's just that refinement has to come. And I think it's important for, as we've been saying, it's important to note that he won't be a good defender from day one. I think there's going to be a little bit of a misnomer where people are going to be like, yeah, the kid, you know, physical, tough defender, locked in all the time, really good. Just not the case. I just don't think that'll be the case for him from his rookie season. I think it's going to take him a couple of years to really get there with more refinement and coaching and just straight up NBA experience, right?
Yeah.
He's not going to be going against a lot of guys in the NBA that are that unathletic as Baylor Shireman are. So I think we really want to note that there are good things and good flashes, but he's not ready to be like a high end defender from day one.
No, like I think if you're looking for that, you take a guy like Jarris, you take a guy like maybe Taylor Hendricks, who still has his warts too, as a defender, obviously different positions. But I even think this defensive possession is like, this is good defense. You know what I mean? Like he's on like a smaller guard who has him out on an island. He gets really low, which I love that he's able to get low and bendy, hand right in the face. It's just a tough shot. And like at the NBA level, like if you get switched onto Dame or Steph or Trey or whoever, like you're going to need to make some tough shots, right? Like, those guys are going to make tough shots. And all you could try to do is force them into making the tough shot. Like, and you go, all right, we made him work, right? It wasn't easy. Again, this is going to be the same kind of situation, like beats him to the spot, fade away like hand in the face. Like, hey, congratulations. I even think that on some of these ISO on ball possessions, you look at it and you go, hey,
he did everything right.
He did everything right. And that's way more like, you should judge this kind of stuff, yeah, like way more favorably than like if he got dusted and a guy just missed a shot. Like sometimes the process is better than the result.
No, I'm with you, Corey. I'm with you, Corey. I don't have too much to add, just because I agree with all of this, man. I think he's got his good flashes. Just refinement has to come. So, and also, Corey, I like what you said about the fact that he can guard smaller, but that shouldn't be his main thing that he's doing. With that type of strength and, you know, what you can do versatility wise with a guy of his size and frame, I just don't know if it's the best use of his ability to have him chasing around guards and shooters all day long.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think that he's going to be a guy who should guard like threes and fours.
Yes.
Like that'll be his best defensive position and probably offensive position as well. Okay. If you're buying stock in Cam Whitmore, who maybe have you bought stock in previously?
This was really hard for me, man. Considering where I have him, considering my concerns with his shooting, and I'm like, I don't even think he's a level of passer. It was actually hard for me to find somebody, but I wrote down like Aaron Gordon, could potentially be an Aaron Gordon type of guy, where, you know, Aaron Gordon clearly didn't reach the ceiling that people had in mind when he first got drafted and came into the NBA. But he's in the finals right now, playing next to Jokic, and he's a really, really important cog to their success. Never became the shooter that some people thought he would become. Yeah, man, I don't, this was tough for me, but I threw Aaron Gordon in there. And also, just not really a comparison, but what came to mind was I was an idiot and I believed in Derek Williams. We've talked about this so many times. And I look at Cam Whitmore and I'm like, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. So, yeah.
I think he's like a blend of like Miles Bridges and Jaylen Brown is kind of who I think he plays like. I definitely could see the role of like Aaron Gordon, but Aaron Gordon had like way better playmaking feel.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah, he could pass it.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like, but I definitely think I think there's some RJ Barrett to him. Like they play differently, but like, you know, sometimes RJ has that kind of tunnel vision, gets downhill. RJ was a much better passer in college for sure. But it's primarily like downhill drivers who are like not really good shooters, but like you're kind of okay if they take those shots. Mm-hmm. But I do think that there is like, I think he's safer. I don't think he gets played off the court in the playoffs in the same way that like Isaac Okoro or Stanley Johnson have like that kind of downside. Like I think his downside is his floor is higher than that. But like we have to remember, like Stanley Johnson went eighth. Isaac Okoro went sixth, you know, like, and we can't just sit and go, oh, well, we knew that was going to happen. Like, obviously we did, like people did were much higher on those guys. You know what I mean? Like, so, like, if the shot doesn't work and he goes to a really weird situation, it could get weird for him, is all I'm saying. Like, but then again, like, if he goes to a place like Charlotte that has a playmaker like LaMelo, or if he goes to Indiana with Halliburton, you know what I mean? Like, now you're looking at, like, potentially his career could be completely different. So, like, fit and context definitely work. It definitely matters, especially for a guy like him that I personally think has so many question marks.
Yeah, Corey, I first off, I want to say, like, D. Steven in the thing said Gordon was miscast as some skilled offensive player. Cam is a good amount better off the bounce. Just want to say, D, we might be saying the same thing about Cam Whitmore 5 to 10 years from now. Just want to throw that out there, you know, like I get what you're saying. And also I wasn't saying it's an apples to apples comp, but there's a very real world 10 years from now. We're going, man, people thought Cam Whitmore was going to be doing stuff off the dribble. You know, we thought he was nasty with the handle, thought he was a tough shot maker. That sure didn't pan out. There's a very real world where that happens. And so, and like you said, Corey, if you look at where Okoro was taken, right? Aaron Gordon, where he was taken. Derek Williams, where these guys were taken. Like, you know, in hindsight, Stanley Johnson. In hindsight, we could be like, oh, yeah, we knew that they weren't going to work out. Well, then why the hell did were they taken that high when they were taken, right? So there is some real risk with Cam Whitmore, man.
Yeah, 100%. Dirty Dancer says, reminds me a little of Corey Maggette for the old folks.
Mm.
I got Corey Maggette for, I was thinking when I was watching Ricky Council film.
Okay.
But I could see it a little bit. I could see it a little bit with Cam, downhill driver. Comment section is popping today. Shout out to everybody getting hype for the draft. Shout out to everybody in the comment section, everybody watching live on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe to the channel if you're not yet, and make sure you hit that like button if you are watching and you haven't yet. All right, Albert, it's time for America's favorite segment. I need you to sell me this pen on potential top five pick Cam Whitmore out of Villanova.
Here we go. this is going to be one of the tougher ones I do, but okay. If you're interested in a 1% athlete with an NBA ready physique, a guy who really pops athletically, then you should take a look at Cam Whitmore, a guy who I think eventually will offer you versatility on both ends of the floor as a, well, okay, let's start on defense, right? I think he can offer you in terms of guarding multiple positions, even flash some weak side rim protection type of stuff. On offense, if you've got a great developmental staff, a great shooting coach, some people to really help him work on his in-between game, tighten up the handle, tighten up the jump shot, then yeah, there's a potential versatile offensive player in there as well. But yeah, if you're a true believer, and there are people out there and GMs out there that are true believers in 1% athletes, then Cam Whitmore is a guy that should be really high on your list because he is a clear S-tier 1% type of athlete with an NBA-ready physique. So if that's the type of guy that you're into, then you should absolutely look into investing a high-end pick on Cam Whitmore.
Absolutely. And I could see a team doing it, and I could see Cam Whitmore. I could see that bet definitely paying dividends. The shot making flashes, which are potentially special. The athleticism, absolutely special. The potential versatility on both sides of the ball, really impressive. And I could definitely see him being a running mate in the right circumstance on a team that plays in the playoffs. So would I like to see him play for Jay Wright? I will say that. But Cam Whitmore, weird season, potentially weird player, but man, a ton of fun. I will say also, like, I saw Cam live in the Big East tournament, and he is as physically imposing in person as you would imagine that he is. All right, that is going to do it for this episode of the Draft Act podcast. Before we get out of here, I want to encourage everybody to head to NoCeilingsNBA.BigCartel.com. And if you haven't yet, go and get yourself a copy of the 2023 NBA Draft Guide. It's out. It's 120 plus pages, 18,000 plus words on the No Ceilings top 60 prospects. As you could see, like, the cover's beautiful. Shout out to Matt Skiff for knocking it out of the park. We paid homage to the 96 cover of Slam Magazine here. We got Victor in the Camby spot. We got Scoot in the Marbury spot. Amen in the Kobe spot. Jarris in the Sharif spot. And Brandon Miller in the Ray spot. We have new merch. The whole crew worked really hard. So it's $10 and it is well worth the investment if you are somebody who enjoys the draft and are trying to prepare in any way that you can. You could also go to NoCeilingsNBA.com, subscribe there. It's free, and you could search for, we've written on just about every prospect and even guys that aren't going to get drafted, guys who probably aren't going to get two-way deals and are going to be G League or playing in Europe. So we have you covered any way you want to do it. Albert, tell the people where they can find you.
You could find me on Twitter at Alberto Gim is where you can find me. On Instagram, I'm at GTGNBA is where you can find me on Instagram. Been doing a lot of guest pods recently out of nowhere. Yeah, very thankful. Really appreciative of all the invites I've been doing. I did like an Alex Golden Pacers mock draft type of thing. Did the Locked On pod with Josh Lloyd. Did a Lakers Legacy pod with Jonathan Hernandez. Recording a Kings pod tonight, which should be coming out sometime later this week as well. So been a lot busier than I thought I'd be. But always really thankful for all the opportunities. And Corey, something that I keep in mind always is you always told me that back in the early days, whenever anyone invited you, you always said yes. So I've been trying to do the exact same, because you said yes to me when I was an absolute nobody and had like five people listening to my pod every week. So just trying to keep up that same energy and help out wherever I can. So look out for me on the internet doing pod stuff. And and last thing, Corey, you and I are going to do a lot of writing soon. So
We're both going to have four pieces coming out, three of which will be lottery team previews that Albert and I will be collaborating on. I'm writing about Brandon Miller. You're writing about
Grady
Dick. Yeah. So a lot of writing coming from us personally. You could find me at Corey Tulliba. You could find us at No Ceilings NBA, and all of the content's going to be there. It's going to rock. Everybody, the team has been on fire lately. We got more film sessions coming up with other prospects that we're really excited about. So stay tuned, stay locked in. Until next time, thank you for rocking with us, everybody. We out. Peace.
Peace.
It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/sportsfan and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.